The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowe is in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Welcome to Dory's Big Show, and it's always an honor and great to be in for Dory Monson. Look, a lot of things happening today. We've got, of course, the continued Supreme Court of the United States hearings, which we'll get to in just a moment. Are they going to make a difference? Probably not, but they are starting to create some sources of entertainment, and you'll find out about that. But first, we got to take the big lead to a new level.
The Big Lead, top national.
Turns out if you're a nominee for the Supreme Court of the United States and you happen to say something along the lines of sexual preference, something that, oh, let's face it, a lot of people have said over a course of time, and it's an answer to a question about sexual preference or sexual orientation or sexual proclivities. Turns out whatever you say, if you are a nominee of someone with an R next to their name, is going to be offensive. Thus, State Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii.
You use the term sexual preference to describe those in the LGBTQ community. Sexual preference is an offensive and outdated term.
I would like to just make a quick follow-on to some of Senator Hirono's comments. I certainly didn't mean and, you know, would never mean to use a term that would cause any offense in the LGBTQ community.
You know, at this point, you know, whatever you say is going to be offensive because they don't like you. And by the way, offensive isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world, okay? Offensive sometimes just means, you know, truth can hurt, right? You know, look, for example, I'm overweight. So when, you know, if somebody comes up and says, look, you know, obesity is one of the top causes of heart disease, you know, and you've got it. That can be offensive. It can be painful, but it can also be true. And there's a big difference between in terms of how people say something. If somebody says it in the way that I just did, you know, that's a pretty clinical way of saying things, and obviously they've got a heart in the right place. But if you walk up to somebody and say, "Hey, fat slob, you've got a big problem here because, you know, you could have a heart attack and die," that's, you know, rude, inconsiderate, and cruel. So, you know, there's a difference in tone and a nuance that's being lost in the hysterical gotcha culture and in the quote unquote woke movement and in the Twitter mobs that are out to grab everybody, and the senator is a part of the problem. The idea that sexual preference is somehow aimed at, it's shocking from coming from the senator from Hawaii, because she's not fitting the age group that is more in tune with nursing grudges. You know, I think that younger generations, not all of you, but younger generations tend to, it's almost like being offended gives you a sense of power and entitlement. And when you've been hurt, it means, you know, you're a victim and therefore you're deserving of something extra. And you can have power over people for that. And it doesn't empower you. It kind of keeps you mired in, you know, looking for outside forces that have held you back instead of looking internally to see how you can move forward. But I think it's a deep and divisive and dangerous cultural problem that we have today. Now, if Senator Hirono is correct and Judge Amy Coney Barrett is a problem because she used the term sexual preference, is she going to be calling out other Democrats like these?
This time bring everybody along, regardless of color, sexual preference.
Based on whatever color, what their sexual preference might be.
By race, by age, by sexual preference.
Doesn't matter what your sexual preference is.
What their sexual preference is.
Never in the course of her military career had anything about her sexual preference had any impact.
Based upon race, color, or preference, or sexual preference.
I don't think that you use the term sexual preference as just, I don't think it was an accident.
Our society has come to respect people. Whatever their sexual preference.
All right. So those are all Democrats, all of them using the term sexual preference. None of them got hammered by the PC police for using the term sexual preference. Sexual preference has, in fact, been passed around for years as, you know, as a favored term. And yet now suddenly, because the potential replacement for Ruth Bader Ginsburg says it, well, let's jump on that and try to pretend that she's, you know, doing something horrible. Talking in an outdated, she's as backwards as some nut job from the 1960s deep south Alabama. It's ridiculous. And at some point, you know, the gotcha culture, it's a mockery of itself. And I'd say that it couldn't get worse, but there are historical examples of cultures basically, you know, turning inward and ripping each other apart. You know, I think of the French Revolution as an example. So human nature is just dangerous enough where this kind of thing can spiral. At first, it seems weird, and it's out in the fringes, and it's on college campuses, and then suddenly it's spreading out everywhere, and you think, well, you know, that's a joke. And then it starts getting serious when you start forcing people into some kind of conformity, and you're getting the thought police. And I think we're kind of approaching that point right now. Speaking of approaching points of too much money, too much to handle, let's go to the next big lead.
The big lead, big local.
Well, it looks like King County is going to increase taxes in order to, well, they did. The King County Council increased the sales tax in order to provide for homelessness. Metropolitan King County Council voted to implement a 0.1% sales tax to fund housing for people who have been chronically homeless. Some of the county's largest cities, according to the Seattle Times, dropped out of that plan by passing their own versions of the plan. You know, I get all this. I was pointing out on back when I was doing regular radio, I was pointing out the growth of homeless encampments throughout the brush and the woods surrounding Seattle and other places long before it became, you know, a nationally known or even widely regionally recognized problem. Because I could see it, and I would tell people, have you seen how many encampments are starting that didn't notice? And I would point them out, and they were shocked that they were there because they weren't noticing the tarps back then were brown. You know, they tried to keep them hidden. I think people that were doing it were kind of worried about getting caught because it's illegal camping. There's garbage there and stuff like that. Well, then it became so open that, you know, people, they could put a fluorescent orange neon sign lit up, you know, tarp along with a drug lab outside, and nobody's going to do anything about it for a period of time, at least in Seattle. So, and these places have, you know, piles of garbage around. It's left communities worried about their parks. Yesterday, we talked to the friend of Denny Park founder, and he mentioned he picked up 200 needles in one day, you know, at outside encampments there. You know, I've seen it myself in places where I've taken my kids, and all of a sudden I'm worried, you know, what's going to happen. I've seen houses with green belts on them, and I've wondered, how do those people feel knowing that at any moment an encampment could come in? And the response from officials that keeping public spaces clean and getting people to follow the law is weak at best, and you start getting nervous. But I do empathize with the idea of housing people. I don't empathize with the idea of raising taxes right now with the number of people that have been struggling with a year where you've been had forced economic retraction and shutdown. I saw one of the council members mention that that, you know, hotels are depressed right now, so the sales prices are low. Well, that's because they've been strangled. I mean, we're in the midst of a pandemic, and they haven't been allowed to operate. You know, talk about kicking people while they're down, you know. The other thing, too, is King County and Seattle have been spending a lot of money on homelessness. Are we really sure that we have to increase taxes to do whatever it is that we want to do now? You know, if you have some new bold approach, what about starting clean with the programs that you have and seeing if that works rather than adding? And I know they'll say, well, this is just a pittance. This is just a small amount. But that kind of stuff adds up. And by the way, there's also something to be said for prioritizing. You know, one of the things that King County Executive Dow Constantine says is he wants this housing for an estimated 2,000 people in the county who have a disability and who have struggled with homelessness for years. Well, I mean, the disabled and the mentally ill that are homeless, you know, those are very weak and vulnerable people in our society, and we should care for them. We should find a way to help them, particularly if they're willing to help themselves. And if they have a drug problem, I think we should force them to get help, because we shouldn't be the ones footing the bill, cleaning up trash, having our public spaces destroyed because somebody else is in the grips of an addiction and unable to make decisions about how they live and what they do. I think we've reached that point. And there's all kinds of social spillover costs that are happening all over the place with the homeless population in Seattle. And we're like a beacon for them because Seattle's spending so much money. We're basically saying, you know, come here. We'll let you do whatever it is you need to do. I mean, we're in the rainy season now, so maybe folks will be heading to California or San Francisco instead. But rest assured, we're certainly a beacon, and we're now nationally known for being lax in rules, lax in enforcement, for having a lot of services available. But at some point, you know, I think you know it's a tough thing because when you oppose a tax like this, or you start saying you're sick of these encampments. I know people who they look at the encampments, they're horrified, they're ugly, but they're afraid of saying that they don't like them, because then they feel like they're being against the homeless, or they're being dismissive or callous or uncaring, you know. And I see this at least on a weekly, almost on a daily basis, and it would be daily if I was still commuting, but you know, with the COVID shutdown, it's just not as often anymore. But if you go into any major shopping center, or if you're driving along, you see people on the side of the road, young people holding signs, wanting that handout, and you see people that have good hearts and they desire to help them and feed them and care for them, and they walk up and give them money. And it just pains me every time I see it, because it's putting your heart over your head, and instead of doing the tough thing, you know, which is really what love is about, if you love somebody and you want to give them hope, you can't do what enables them to continue their destructive path. And that is extremely hard. You know, sometimes that means you have to pass them by. I'm not saying it's always wrong to give a sandwich. I've done that myself. You know, almost every time I've given a sandwich. In fact, the last time I tried to give a sandwich, the ladies that looked up and said, I was trying to sleep. You know, I wasn't hungry, but I was just trying to sleep and have some peace and quiet till you showed up. And I was like, okay, well, you know, forget that I was here. So, you know, and I've had that kind of experience before, because for the most part, people are in the throes of addiction and they're unable to break free, and they're not going to be making the rational decisions that you and I would. We'll talk with Reagan Dunn, King County Council member, who is the sole no vote on this sales tax hike coming up at the bottom of the hour. So you can stay tuned for that. All right. Next big lead.
The big lead, big local.
It's happened again. Yet another iconic area business is closing up shop in downtown Seattle. The Gene Juarez Salon and Spa in downtown Seattle has permanently closed. It's off Pine Street as of yesterday. You know, again, my only question is, why did it take so long? You know, there was a story on Como News where, you know, the chief operating officer is expressing this as a difficult decision, that they're proud of their history, that you know, they've been there since 1971. They've always really liked it. They, you know, Seattle is like, it's the place to be. Everybody wants to go. But, you know, they're pointing out, hey, there's fewer people, right? It's a place where can you guarantee the physical safety of your shop? You know, do you feel comfortable having people go downtown? And do you think that their persons are going to be safe, that their vehicles are going to be safe? Can they, if they make an appointment, can they even get there on time, you know, within a half hour? Now they've got less foot traffic thanks to COVID-19 protests that keep turning violent. And they just basically said, can't do it. Got to close up. And, you know, this is what, over 125 now downtown businesses that have closed, according to the Downtown Seattle Association? Over 125, you know, and I feel like we're still living in this zone where we don't fully know the impacts of the economic retraction of COVID-19. We keep having relatively good news, I think, when it comes to the spread of the virus and the ability for us to manage our risk and go about our business and our lives. But we haven't caught up to that yet in Washington State. I think that there's some political investment that takes place at the state level here, which leaves us farther behind others. We also have these protests going on, not as bad as Portland, but pretty bad. And, you know, we have this kind of attitude, well, oh, heck, it's a peaceful protest. They should be able to do what they want. Forgetting about the people, the businesses, the men and women and family members that are trying to provide for their families downtown and are unable to do so because this kind of chaotic stuff is relentless. And it happens often enough, and the public reaction to it is such that you know that it's not going to stop. So it's going to continue going. So the only thing for me, I'm not surprised at all that that they're gone. You know, they're sending employees to their other locations. Good for them. You know, they're keeping those other locations open. But this should be like a canary in the coal mine, again, for Seattle, saying, look, just because things were great doesn't mean they'll always be great. You know, Detroit was a great city once, too. And then it was crushed. Como did a good job listing the high-profile crimes in that area, shooting between rival members that left one woman dead and several injured in January, civic unrest that began in May and lingers to today, you know, the lockdown on hair salons and spas. So it's like we're crushing them, and we're kind of sitting here wondering, oh, gee, how did that happen? David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. It looks like if you're in King County, good news for you. You get to pay an extra 0.1% sales tax, an increase that's slated to take effect on January 1st of 2021. So if you thought 2020 was bad, just on the first day of 2021, things will get a little bit worse. Unless, of course, you think that it's a great idea to increase these taxes in order to house the homeless. Which is and purchase former nursing homes and hotels, which is supposed to be the goal of this tax. Here to talk about it with us is King County Councilman Reagan Dunn. Reagan, thanks so much for making the time.
David, thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
0.1% doesn't sound like much. And it's not like I think most people, when they see people struggling with homelessness, they want them housed. They want them in a better position. But I think a lot of sure. people are very suspect about the idea of giving King County or Seattle more money on the homeless issue, given what they're seeing in public spaces and efforts they've seen so far. What are your thoughts?
Well, that's just it. First of all, the 0.1% will generate about $80 million of revenue. But the plan is to bond against it. So what they're trying to generate with bonding, what they will generate with bonding is up around $400 million. So we're literally mortgaging our existing tax structure to provide additional funding to purchase homes for the chronically homeless. I'm not talking about, you know, sort of these, you know, lower middle income people that are struggling to make rent. I'm talking about chronically homeless. And so what we've seen, of course, is Seattle has become a dead end street for the nation's homeless. That's because so much has been provided. And this $400 million will put us on par with Los Angeles County in terms of what they spent. So a community like ours, which is one quarter of the population of LA County, is going to be spending just as much. And if you look at LA and what they've done, they have spent an incredible amount. If you price it out per unit, it's around $400,000 per unit. All this money is going to go to house around 2,000 of our homeless. You do the math. That's about $200,000 a person, and it really is just taking Seattle's old failed strategies and just putting them on steroids, just giving them more money without rethinking the process and the tactics and the measurement and the accountability and the performance review that we should be building into the system.
Also, there's this thing where you see a 0.1% sales tax increase, the number looks so small. right? You know, it just it seems like, oh, well, I'll hardly notice that. And then there's the usual, you know, for a family for a household making $35,000 to $45,000 a year, they're going to pay just $19 a year in additional sales tax. $140,000 a year for a household, estimated $66 a year in sales tax. You know, one, I always wonder if those estimates end up being true, because we've seen like school districts make these estimations and they've been woefully and radically wrong over the past several bond issues in various places. This case, you know, I feel like you know it might be. Let's say it was $66 a year, but that doesn't mean that's the only spot where it's going to be going up. You know, with your property taxes and other home values going up, I feel like I'm getting nickel and dime to death, and I don't even live in King County. What are your constituents saying?
You're talking about a sales tax. It is. It's called incrementalism. It's a strategy designed to just very slowly chip up the continued increase in taxes across the board. It's done in property tax raises as well, and levies and sales tax increases. But there's a reason why. Let's just think about this. Cars cost less in Puyallup. Everybody knows that, right? You know why? It's about 2% less in sales tax if you drive down, you know, down to Fife or Tacoma. And for big ticket items and like washers and dryers and refrigerators and cars and that sort of stuff, people are going to start, it's worth the drive to go down there and get a big ticket item for cheap. The other thing is it hits right in the middle of this pandemic. We have a whole lot of economic uncertainty. It's really not going to help the economy in any way. But, I mean, it's a little bit of money. Can we provide more money for our homeless? Sure. But we just created an unprecedented partnership between county and the cities, the 39 cities in Seattle. And we haven't even had a chance to talk about this as a strategy, this Homeless Governance Commission that I serve on. So we haven't put the strategy in place. We haven't looked at the data-driven best practices that have been proven to reduce homelessness across the country. We just went straight for the money, and we'll find a way to justify it later on. So it just is, you know, look, you can buy a house for a chronically homeless person, or you can dramatically subsidize their house. But if they are suffering from mental illness, or if they are an addict of various kinds, they're going to be able to keep it, hold on to it. You're not solving the underlying problems. And what I'm seeing from the left is this constant mantra, and that is, we just need a house. If we give them a house, they're going to be better. Well, not really. You haven't solved the underlying problem on why they're homeless. And so that's what the Homeless Governance Commission is supposed to look at. Nobody wants to look at it because the downtown Seattle establishment, political establishment, just wants to buy everybody a house. If you look at LA, $400,000 per unit. And there's all kinds of scandals on how much is being spent there. Is it really going to make a difference? The answer is probably not.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just saw a story about the billionaire Mark Cuban. You know, he brought a Hall of Famer NBA star off the streets because, you know, he was homeless. And this is a guy who had a ton of money, you know, but it was a human problem. You know, I've seen others who, I mean, I know of people who've had a lot of money, but they lose it all because they've got human problems, and pouring more money toward them, it might give them a place to stay for a few days, but no matter how much money you poured toward them, it's all going to be gone very quickly unless you address some of these underlying issues. What's King County's record, by the way, in terms of if they buy these hotels and nursing homes? I take it they're going to have to manage them. So I can see where there's going to be, you know, an enormous sprawl there. And what's their record on managing housing anyway?
Well, it's not going really well. It's called the leaky bucket theory. So you identify $400,000. By the time you're done paying administration, management, special interest, nonprofit groups in support of all this, you're getting, what, 20, 30, 40%? To actually buy the housing. So what you need to do is you need to have a comprehensive data-driven strategy based on best practices that work around the country and around the world, and then put money behind some of those and measure them aggressively to make sure they work. What we are seeing in Seattle, in my view, and data suggests this, is that Seattle has become a dead-end street for the United States homeless population because everybody's coming here because we're throwing so much money at it. $400 million is on par now with LA County. I mean, of course, let's take, and there's nothing in there that says that the people who have been waiting for housing for four, five, 6 years get to be up front in line. You know, you can show up tomorrow. Hey, I just heard Seattle do this. Let's show up, and we're going to be competing with the folks who are homegrown homeless problems. Nobody wants to address that stuff. I proposed a one-way bus ticket, all expenses paid for chronically homeless who want to go to another part of the country and get better care from a family member there. And, of course, that was shot down by the left as being, you know, somehow too harsh. I mean, anyway, it is one thing that they want to do, and it's exactly what they've been doing for the last 20 years, and it's exactly what isn't working. It's actually making the problem worse. Clearly, some of this money is going to help. There are certain families that can receive it, and they'll do a lot of good, but it needs to be coupled with things like job training, addiction and recovery services, mental health services, and it needs to be done more thoughtfully than just buying everybody a home. And if you think about it, the most expensive thing you can do is buy somebody a home or substantially subsidize it when there's all these different other job training and mental health and addiction recovery services. It would go a long ways towards solving the problem.
Yeah, and I also just feel like there's a lot of uncertainty with the pandemic. A lot of people have been suffering, you know, raising taxes in the aftermath of this with so many people on the brink. That deeply troubles me, too. So,
It should be. I mean, look, the county council sponsored, they just put legislation forward to create another paid holiday for all county employees. There has not been a higher raises. Metro Transit drivers got a 10% $80 million raise. Here we are raising taxes. The bureaucracy that are funded and union protected right now in King County, those 19,000 employees are deeply out of touch with the economic realities of the average taxpayer, and that's what concerns me the most. That's why I was the only vote against it. I'm sure they'll say I'm a heartless person. I'm not afraid to put real money behind the strategy as long as it really works, and what we've seen so far in Seattle isn't something that works well.
Councilmember Reagan Dunn, the lone no vote on the tax increase. Thanks so much for making the time on the Dory Monson Show.
Yeah, you know, love Dory. Looking forward to having him back. And, you know, we'll keep up the good work. Call me anytime. I look forward to being on the show.
Aren't we all? Thanks, Reagan.
Thank you, sir.
David Bose in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Troy Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. The undersheriffs recommended firing a detective who shared the All Lives Splatter post on his social media accounts, this in the Seattle Times. Now, this made some headlines earlier when it was when the social media posts were first exposed because the individual involved, the veteran detective Michael R. Brown, is a cousin of Governor Inslee. And it's interesting to me that initially we would hear about the, you know, the guy being cousin of Inslee, and now we don't hear so much about it. The Seattle Times does mention it, and to be fair, you know, I mean, look, it's not like he's responsible for what his cousin does at all, but I feel like there'd be a greater prominence if, you know, let's say it was Dino Rossi was governor and his cousin did something like this. I feel like the headline would read, Rossi's cousin does this, and every story would mention it. Am I wrong? You know, we'll never know, because I don't think Dino Rossi's going to be running for governor again. But I wish he'd give it a whirl, and it'd be interesting to see. Anyway, back to the issue here. I generally don't, you know, there's a lot of times where there's these calls for attacks on people because they posted something on social media. People get offended. Everybody's freaking out. And I feel like there's a phenomenon on social media where there's this a feeling like you have to respond urgently. So you type stuff out sometimes without thinking it through. And in this case, though, after they see the All Lives Splatter post, this is directly after, you know, a driver struck two people on I-5 and, you know, a young woman died. You know, they went through his social media posts and found other posts of a similar kind of vein. And look, he's a police officer. He's got a public function. He needs the public to have confidence in him, even if he's frustrated with protests and other things. I am sympathetic to people who have dark humor or gallows humor is the phrase. I think, you know, I've worked around people that have had stressful jobs dealing with tragedy. You know, media covers tragedy a lot, so you read these horrible stories. I mean, I'll tell you, in my show prep over the years, I've read some pretty horrific tales, many of which I wouldn't share on the air. Once in a while, I'd bring something up on the air, and then I realized it's just so dark, nobody ever wants to hear about it. It's just so awful. And so, you know, I've been in places where people said, you know, I can't believe this happened. I thought, well, I've got 10 stories on my mind right now that are worse, you know, and they're in shock. But the way people deal with that, and this happens in the military and the media and elsewhere, is gallows humor. And it can be offensive and inappropriate, and it's a way that people deal with stress. I'm not saying that's what this is, but I'm saying, generally I can see this kind of thing. But, again, you're in a position of authority. You need people to have faith that you care about them. You're going to treat them equally. And then you show this lack of judgment. And I'm much more forgiving when somebody does something so blatant. If they just say, you know what, at that moment, I thought it was funny. I didn't think about it again. Looking at it now, I am just ashamed. You know, it's an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment to the department. It undermines, you know, us as sympathetic people that can be called by anybody regardless. You know, but instead you get a response that basically says, nah, what? I didn't know that'd be offensive. I didn't see it playing that way. That is simply not believable. Yet that's what the report says the response is here. I didn't see a connection between All Lives Splatter and Black Lives Matter. Does that pass a Bolshevik test? Because I'm not seeing it. He said as a kid when his dad was mad, he'd tell us to go out and play on the freeway. When I saw this, it reminded me of my dad who had recently passed away. So you chalk up the empathy card. I'm just not – every kid has had – well – at a previous generations, you'd have an adult saying, hey, go play in the street. Not that they actually meant it, but it was bad. So this wasn't the only social media post that had a similar kind of sensitivity. It's all bad. The guy's been a detective for 40 years. Looks like he had a driving incident that may have had intoxication involved. Looks like the system kind of failed. There should have been a longer break then. And some issues addressed.